This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. You may have heard that President Obama nominated Janet Yellen to head the Federal Reserve. If confirmed, she'd be the first woman to do the job. The Fed can seem far away from everyday life, but it really matters to your wallet. Marketplace's economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins me now to connect the dots, a little refresher on why we pay attention to the temple of money. Plus, we're going to take some calls. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Lizzie.
Janet Yellen, we finally get the announcement. She's going to be the chair person, man, woman of the Fed. Break this down for me. What does this mean for a regular person?
So for a regular person, the Federal Reserve is, well, it's one of the most powerful economic institutions in the world. And so when the Federal Reserve tightens monetary policy, so when the Federal Reserve decides it's time, you probably heard this expression, to start tapering from what it's been doing, interest rates tend to go up, and you would see that in higher mortgage rates. You know, the Federal Reserve activity affects the whole interest rate market. So if your auto loan is going up, well, it's probably going up because the Federal Reserve is running a tighter monetary policy as opposed to what it's been doing for the last couple of years, which is running a pretty loose monetary policy to try to support this economy. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but interest rates are really low.
And what do we know about Janet Yellen and where those interest rates are likely to stay? She's been a part of the Fed for a long time. And the Fed has pretty much said, we're going to keep those rates low, right?
First of all, she is a top flight, top ranked economist. She's been in the system. So she knows how the Federal Reserve banks work. She knows how the White House works. She knows how the Federal Reserve works. Since 2010, she's been the vice chairman of the Fed. And I think it's a historic moment to recognize, assuming that she does get approved, for the first time in the 100-year history of the Federal Reserve, a woman will head it.
And that's a really big moment. There are people out there talking about, you know, potentially the most powerful economic moment for women in the history of the world. That might be hyperbole, but that's a really big deal.
Yes.
We're talking about housing prices. We're talking about mortgage rates. So our first question is from Sandra in Chicago, and she's got a question about potentially buying a house. Sandra, your question was whether you are too old to buy a condo, but I want to get some backstory first,
okay,
because that was your top line question, but you were asking about prices going up, but I want to know what you're looking for and what you think maybe you can and can't afford.
Well, first of all, I'm looking for a condo. Prices had gone down so much that I started thinking about it, and I think it would be helpful for you to know that I've been a freelancer for a long time. And so I thought, well, this is an opportunity for somebody like me to finally buy. About 3 years ago, I took a full-time job in addition to my freelance work. So I now have steady income in addition to the stuff that I do normally.
And you say you're a freelancer. What kind of work do you do?
I'm an actor. And so, you know, for almost 20 years of my life, the income has been pretty erratic, but I've always been able to make a living. Anyway, so I started looking at condos, and then the prices started edging up, and then I started to think, well, if I'm facing a 30-year mortgage, would it be wiser to use that money toward investing and retirement rather than having a 30-year mortgage?
And how old are you?
I'm 49.
Young. Sorry, I had to leap in there.
I don't know. It just seems like all my friends
yet
with real jobs are further along in this whole process, you know.
Well, let me ask you, how much do you have saved up for retirement?
I have about $40,000 in a retirement fund, and then I have about $40,000 in my personal savings. I have no debt at all.
Well, that's great.
So the first thing, age doesn't really matter.
Okay.
The housing market fluctuates. So it's how conservative can your finances be when you buy? How secure is your income? Because I think that's really the key issue here that so many people face. There's nothing wrong with owning a home. Nothing wrong with owning a condo. There's nothing wrong with renting. The question is, over the next 5, 10 years, how secure is your income?
Alrighty.
And also, by the way, Well, you got 40,000 retirement savings, 40,000 in sort of emergency opportunity fund. So if you're renting and you're continuing to save for your retirement and you're continuing to put money into your emergency savings, you know, you're actually in a really good position over a period of time, better than a lot of people who are sinking all their money into a home. I mean, is that what you really want to do also, is put all your money into this condo? Because whether it's a condo or a home, they're expensive. You got to maintain them. You got to paint them. You're going to want to do things with them. You're going to add to them. And that can add to your quality of life, but it also draws on those savings. And you may have other desires, other goals, which mean if you rent and then save, you might be able to pursue those things more than putting the money into the housing. These are the kinds of issues I'd be weighing.
Which gives you the flexibility to think more broadly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think sounds like for me, the next step for me is to kind of sit down and make a list of what is it that I really want to do. I mean, I always imagine traveling more. I don't want to be eating cat food in my retirement. I have a lot of things on my mind, and that maybe I just need to sit down and figure out what the priorities are.
Thank you so much for calling, Sandra. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. I love the show.
And our next caller is Catherine in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Of course. So I gather you want to talk about saving up for an emergency. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. My husband and I have both been working full-time for a couple of years, but we've only really been able to get together about 1 month worth of emergency funds, and that makes me nervous. We've had a hard time getting beyond that point, and just using the cash that we save each month, it would take us several years, probably closer to five, to really get a solid 6 months saved.
Okay.
So I'm trying to find other ways to get there faster.
And you've got a young child, is that right?
I do, yes. My daughter will be 4 in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that sucks down the cash pretty quickly, doesn't it, having a little kid?
Yeah. I was just looking at the numbers today, and she's easily a quarter to one-third of our income right there.
I would think so. So tell me what you're considering in terms of how to get an emergency fund and what you're thinking about.
Okay, well, the bank that I use, it's one of the larger national chains. They have some gimmicky things that they do once in a while to try to drum up business. One of the things that they do on a pretty regular basis is offer super checks, which for a small interest payment up front allows you to take money off your credit card, and then after a 0% APR period, would begin accruing at credit card interest rate. I've got about $9,500 available on the card. And the most recent checks that I got would be for 0% APR until October of 2015 with a 5% upfront charge.
Ooh. I am pretty sure I know what Chris Farrell is going to say in response to this. I think I am going to just let him go, wind him up and let him go on you right now.
Okay.
In a very nice Minnesota way.
No, because, I really feel for you. And when you said, 5 years, the buildup, that emergency savings, so many people feel that way. It is just hard to build up. I don't like the solution, though, and because you're really borrowing for your emergency fund, and that really isn't the answer. At best, it's a temporary solution to what's a long-term problem, plus 5% is very expensive up front. And then, you still have to pay the debt off, which will draw down your emergency fund. So I'm not a big fan of this idea. It's out there. I would steer clear of it. I don't think borrowing is the way to build up your emergency fund. I got a couple of other ideas, but recognizing mm-hmm. and that there is no easy way to save when, you have a child, you have all your expenses, you're doing your work. I mean, money comes in, money goes out, and I'm recognizing that. But I have two suggestions to make that may help you out a little bit. So
okay.
The first is, for a period, think about for maybe a period of 2 to 3 months, really scrunching back. Is scrunching a word, Lizzie? I think it is. Scrunching back. We'll use it anyway.
We'll let it be a word.
Well, yeah, we'll let that fly by. So, in that 2-3 month period, putting more money into that emergency savings. Now, you only want to do this for a short period of time because you don't want to live a life of misery. But you do it for a short period of time just to boost that emergency savings. And then you go back to what you were doing before in terms of just constantly putting in every month. And the other thing is the discipline for everybody. And I think this is one of the, you know, there are very few laws in personal finance, but I think this is a law. If you can automate your savings as much as possible, it makes it really easy. So if you go to your checking account and you click on the thing that says, okay, every, on the 15th of the month, $50 or $100, whatever sum of money you choose automatically goes into your savings account. So you're not even thinking about it. And then if you have some extra money during the month, you know, an extra $25, you can go ahead and toss that into the savings account. But if you do this combination of 2 or 3 months really just focusing on savings, that's what it's going to be about for the next 2 or 3 months. And then you automate your savings after that, you know, it is going to build up over time. And it will pay off over a longer period of time, because the thing that's always underestimated about an emergency fund, and we talk about emergency fund and you want to have this emergency fund in case you lose a job or whatever, but it then becomes your opportunity fund. You know, you can then spend this to get some education or to make a career change or a job change. Or if you do lose your job, you can take your time to find another job. So it starts out as this emergency fund, but over the course of a lifetime, it becomes your opportunity fund.
And you, I mean, it sounds like you guys are pretty disciplined already. I know that you said you guys don't have cell phones, and that you carpool to work.
We eat lots of beans. We're already pretty much there. We wouldn't be cutting out espressos and lattes at this point.
No, I understand. And that's why I say these things are always easier to advise. They're much easier to say than they actually are to do. But I think you're on the right path. I really do. I mean, just what you were saying and Lizzie, what you were noting. I mean, you're on the right path. You're going the right direction. And we all go through that period of time where it's just not growing. It's just not getting that big. But the surprising thing is, particularly if you can automate the savings, is before you know it, actually it does start to grow. And then it grows on top of itself.
Would it be better to set it to have an automatic saving that's higher than what I think we can do and then pull the money back, or to be cautious while putting the money aside?
I would be cautious because then you don't have to think about it. I mean, part of the reason why you want to do this is you want it to be, it's like with your, do you have a retirement savings account at work?
We do, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, the money's automatically taken out before it shows up in your checking account. So you don't even think about it. I mean, most of us don't. It's sort of like, what we look at is what's in our checking account. So it's sort of setting it up so you're not even thinking about it. It just happens every month. And that's why, though, I like the idea of going a little bit under so that you're safe. You're financially safe not to be thinking about it. And then, as you know, if there's an extra $25, sure, toss that into the savings account. But you don't have to worry about pulling back, which is an extra step.
Okay.
Catherine, thank you so much. I know this is not fun advice, but it also sounds like you guys are pretty dedicated savers and thinking really hard about how to do this well.
We do what we can.
I absolutely echo that. I think what you're doing is great.
All right. Well, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for all your advice and all that you do every week. I think it's awesome to hear you guys.
Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Chris, I want to put a question to you that we got online, and this is, we're staying in the Midwest. We've got sort of a trifecta of Midwest callers this week. This is Jenny from California.
You know, it is part of the country. I just want you to know this. I mean,
my dad's
flyover country, but
I am a big Midwestern fan. This is from Jenny, and she wants to know what you recommend as far as naming a trustee when all the beneficiaries are underage and you don't have an adult family member who can do the job. Now, she says, ideally, it wouldn't be an issue, as we hope to live long enough that all the beneficiaries would no longer be minors, but there's still going to be someone who needs to wrap up the estate at some point. She's curious whether professional trustees are worth the expense and how she goes about finding one. What do you think?
Well, I think if there's not a family member that is willing to be a trustee, and by the way, just as an aside, if you know, that's usually how people pick a trustee is they turn to a trusted family member that has some financial expertise. If you're asked to be a trustee, your initial response, of course, is to be yes. Oh, I'm so honored. You know, I'm part of the family and this is a family obligation. Think twice. Yeah. Trustee is a hard job. Trustee can be a very hard job. It has a lot of
legal obligations
and responsibilities because you're managing this money, you're distributing the assets, you really are taking on a legal liability, and it can be a lot of work. And by the way, that is why a lot of family trustees now get paid. You know, you sort of say, well, like we, because one reason why you turn to a family member is it's cheaper, right? You know, hey, Bob, Uncle Bob, I don't have to pay Uncle Bob. Well, you actually should pay Uncle Bob if he's going to be a trustee. I mean, just to, you know, take account of his time. And just so we're all on the same page, you know, what a trust is, it's like a legal container. And you throw in, you know, it's got assets. So, you know, property, stock portfolio, Aunt Mary's coin collection, you know, all that stuff is in there. And you have a trustee that manages this trust. So, yes, I would turn to a professional. I would go, if you have a banking relationship, I'd go to the bank. And most banks have a trust department or they have a relationship with another trust department. If you're paying a professional, it's going to probably be about 1-2% of assets. But, you know, there's a lot of regulatory restrictions. They have to abide by the Uniform Prudent Investor Act. So, it may not be quite as ideal as a family member that you know and trust. But I think I would definitely deal with a professional, particularly in her situation, because it doesn't sound like she has much choice. So to start off the process, go to your bank, find out what they're offering, what the cost is. Another way of finding somebody is to, if you know somebody, a colleague, a neighbor, a boss who has a trust and they've got somebody that they're working with a professional, see if they are willing to recommend somebody. But I'd start at my bank, actually.
Okay. All right, Chris. Our last caller is Ryan from Ballykinwood, Pennsylvania. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for being here. So congratulations are in order. You just got engaged.
That is correct.
So you want to talk to us about life insurance?
Yes.
What can we do for you today?
Okay. I think I have a fairly basic question. Obviously, I just got engaged, and I'm just trying to cover my bases and look into what I should do in the event that we get married and then, you know, I get hit by a bus.
Let's hope not.
Yeah.
Let's hope not. Yeah. But really, just, you know, I'm thinking I should be looking at term life insurance, but I really don't have a whole lot of assets. And so, you know, that's also part of the question.
I gather this came about, though, because of the insurance policy on your fiance's ring. Tell me the story.
Basically, you know, after I ended up getting the ring, I called up my current insurance company and had a valuable property rider put on it. And while that was happening, they were like, oh, you got engaged. Are you looking, you know, are you covered in other areas? Do you have life insurance? And so that kind of set off the thought of, oh, maybe I should look into this. And that's kind of where it started.
They tried to upsell you, Chris.
Exactly.
So a couple of things. First of all, yes, you would want term life insurance. So term life insurance is a pure death benefit. And okay. If you drop your term life insurance policy, you get nothing. And the advantage of term life insurance is that it is cheap. And so it's really ideal for young people starting off their lives because it's not that expensive. You do get insurance coverage while you're also trying to, build up your retirement savings, build up your emergency fund, you know, all these other demands on your money. So term is really ideal. Just so you know, then there's the cash value. Life insurance, which, you know, an older generation, you see the whole life was the big cash value insurance policy. But there's universal life. There's variable life. There's variable universal life. And there's all kinds of twists and turns. And that always has a savings component to it. But it's more expensive. So term life insurance for most people is the best choice. And then save in your retirement savings and build up that emergency fund. I mean, that's, I think, very key.
Okay.
In terms of now, the in personal finance, when you have a child, if you have a child, you're going to want to have life insurance. You want to protect the child. But when you get married and there's no children involved, should you have life insurance at that point? And I think you should. Not much, But you could have a conversation with your fiance, spouse-to-be, about, okay, if one of us died, as you said, okay, let's just say you got hit by the bus. The proverbial bus does hit you. You know, how long would you like your spouse to grieve, be able to grieve without worrying about the bills? 6 months? A year? Or maybe she, you know, a lot of people actually go back to work because it keeps them sane, but maybe she might want to grieve and do something very different for the next 6 months. So you're not coming up with a big sum of money, but you're sort of having a conversation about, if something happened to you, I do want you to have this period of time, this period of grieving where you don't have to worry about money.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Here's one other aspect of this, and that is that with my job, I do know that we have just included as some of our benefits. We have life insurance worth a year of salary.
Okay, and that probably is just plenty. That's plenty.
Okay.
For most people, that's going to cover it. And does she have that?
I don't know if she has that.
Okay, because if she doesn't, then you'll want to think about getting, you know, some sort of small-term life insurance policy to so if she walks in front of the bus, you know, you get your period.
Okay.
But what you have at work is probably perfectly adequate. It's just part of your employee benefits, and it's at a sum of money that would deal with the kind of situation I'm talking about.
Okay.
Have you guys, Ryan, talked about retirement and those kinds of things anyway? I mean, have you guys sat down and had a financial planning conversation together?
Not quite that far. We're looking at some big ticket items potentially soon, potentially not. Potentially buying a house in May. Our wedding's in March, and you know, my sister's getting married. Actually, our wedding would be in October. My sister's is going to be in March. So there's lots of things on the horizon, and retirement's not really one of them.
Right, but I would, you know, I think where Lizzie, you might be going, and in terms of thinking about this life insurance and buying a home and retirement savings, you know, I think what's really important is having a conversation and sort of setting up some kind of regular conversation so that both of you are on the same page. You're making the decisions are thought out. You know, and I've known people who, you know, for 3 months turned the finances over to one partner and then the next 3 months over to another partner, sometimes just doing it together. But this, it is absolutely critical that everybody is engaged in this conversation and this decision. And one of the things that always drives me crazy is when someone says, you know, well, I'm more responsible for the money. It has to be a joint venture. This is your little small business. This is your household firm. And so even on this life insurance, which I think is a great question to have, I'd have that conversation.
Okay.
It's always worth a talk.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for the advice.
Thank you so much for calling us, Ryan.
Thanks again.
And Chris, thank you, as always.
It was fun.
Chris Farrell is Marketplace's economics correspondent. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Lizzie.
And be sure to send us your money experiences, questions, stories. You can post to our Facebook page or click on the contact link on marketplacemoney.org.